I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. Together we're the functional nerds.
My name is Patrick Hester, his name is John Anilio, and you're listening to episode number 179 of the Functional Nerds Podcast. And John, I am so excited to have the Angel of Death on the podcast and not have to edit out any of his cuss words.
I know, we can just keep all the cuss words in. That is Patrick Hester. He is a author, a blogger, and a podcast dude. You can check out his website, atfmb.com, or you can follow him on Twitter, at atfmb. My name is John Anilio. I'm a songwriter and a composer. You can check out my music over at johnanilio.com, including the Walk the Fire EP, which was a commission from John Muro, an orchestral piece, a couple songs sort of inspired by his Shared World anthology. So if that interests you, go and check it out over at johnanilio.com. And this week we are delighted. I can't believe it's his first time on the show. It feels like this he should have been on before, but we are rectifying that today. And that is Matt Wallace. He is a screenwriter and a novelist and a purveyor of short stories. He's the author of The Failed Cities, which is out from Murky Depths. He's having issues with his website right now, so why don't I just give you his Twitter handle to follow, which is at Matt FN Wallace and WALLACE, and you can use your imagination for what the FN stands for. And Matt, thanks for joining us today.
Greetings, gentlemen. And I'm really sad that people aren't going to get to see this. They can only hear it because as I look at the Google Hangout, we are just three good looking men. I don't know. Just some damn handsome individual. And I'm the only one not wearing glasses, and I feel the worst for it. I feel like I'm missing something.
I think a lot of people that know our show know that Patrick does work for Mer Lafferty's podcast, and, yep. and Matt is the bad cop. And I met Matt quite a few years ago now at a BaltCon, and Matt and I got along quite well, and so we've been sort of social media friends since then. But he's in California screenwriting and doing all sorts of cool stuff, but we keep in touch via the Twitter, and he still does the bad cop and all that kind of jazz.
I think I edited the episode that you guys did live at Balticon.
Oh, with Gail Carriger.
Gail Carriger, right?
That was a
long time ago, but yeah, I think that was one of the first ones I edited for Mer.
That had to be 2010, I think, was the last Balticon I did. That was literally the last con I ever did. I stopped going to cons after that.
And, you know, I definitely want to get into that because, you know, in our last episode with Mike Martinez, we were talking about cons, and, you know, he's got a couple books out through Nightshade, and he's still kind of an up-and-coming author and deciding, what cons do I go to, and should I go to cons, and do they make sense, and
like, all like that a return on investment kind of thing.
And right. And you know, with Matt, and because that was really the first con that I ever went to, so it's funny, it's like my first con and Matt's last con, and I got a lot of insight into it because I was sort of
the mantle, man. It's all you carry that torch, John. You carry it for all of us out here in the darkness.
Carry on, my wayward son.
But you know, the thing with Matt and was Matt seemed to be, how can I say this without like,
don't be thoroughly indelicate. Just I want to hear it now.
Like, I just felt like Matt was the only person sort of, well, I shouldn't say that, but Matt was really in touch with reality. And I felt like maybe not everybody else was. And I was sort of walking around sort of testing the waters. And when I think I was hanging out with Mer. I think Mer was having a signing at the time, and I was just kind of hanging there. And then Matt wandered over, and we ended up talking a lot then. And I'm like, yeah, this dude seems to really know what's going on more than maybe everybody else around here does. And
John, here's the thing, though. Matt will also tell you.
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
And not everybody will.
Yeah, but
I don't seem to have a problem with that. Sometimes I think that is a problem, though. Doing that is a problem. No, the thing is, a con is not a place for reality, and anybody who disagrees with that is delusional. It's just not. Like, it's not set up for that. Yeah. It's to take people from their scattered pockets of obscurity and bring them all together and create this artificial reality where what they love is the whole world for a few days. Like, and I'm not saying it's a good thing or a bad thing. I'm just saying cons are set up to be this complete microcosm separate from reality. Like, so it's a place to be delusional. You pay and you get on a plane and you go have a 3-day delusion, and that is what it is. And I think that's perfectly healthy as long as you realize that's what it is.
So it's baseball camp for authors.
It is baseball camp for authors. So it's like, you know what immediately I thought is, man, don't use a sports metaphor for that's not appropriate at all. But it is. It's a fantasy camp, and the only time it gets screwed up is when people start to take it too seriously or try to apply it to life outside of the con. And I think too many people do that. Too many people take it way too seriously and start to think who I am at the con is who I am in real life. That's amazing. I'm amazing.
It's not a good time. It's like trying to have a conversation with the people at work about Greg Egan.
Yeah. Well, and I do want to take this moment to announce that Matt and Patrick and I will be launching Delusion Fest this year. So you know, keep your ears open at this spot for Delusion Fest 2014. It's coming up.
I thought it was Delusion Cruise.
Ooh, Delusion Cruise. Delusion Cruise?
Delusion Cruise to nowhere.
You know, Patrick, I almost considered... I'm not going to, but I almost consider there's a progressive rock cruise.
Okay.
There is nothing progressive about that. That's complete right there, man.
But it's all like the progressive rock stuff that I like. But I'm just like, you know what? That's probably overkill. I'll probably hate all that music by the end of that.
That's exactly what I'm saying. I ruin progressive rock for you.
Just think about the fodder for new music, John. You could do a whole concept album if that cruise ship like runs out of power and everybody's pooping on the decks and stuff. That's like a whole concept
album. That's the first place your head goes.
Yeah, I'm like, wow, thanks. Thanks, man.
That's literally the first thing you thought of. What if the power goes out and everybody just starts shitting everywhere? That's the natural thing that would happen, right? Yeah. Everybody would immediately go there.
Yeah.
We just do it in a pot and throw it overboard. I mean, that seems to make more sense, you know?
Or at least
that's
in a corner, like animals do in the zoo. Or maybe I'm giving people too much credit now. Like, maybe it's such
a
dark
place.
Yeah. You literally couldn't follow.
There was shit everywhere.
Within 5 minutes, I thought it was excessive, really. I felt like we could have given the lights 10 minutes to come back on before everybody just started dumping out all over the deck.
Anyway, poop talk aside, maybe we can get on to our picks of the week.
Absolutely.
Picks of the week.
I like the format that you said. I got a format, an email of what this was. That's literally the first time I've been on. It has to be over 150 podcasts in my time, and this is the first time I got such a neat, detailed format of what we were going to be talking about in the show. It's very professional. Hey, I'm not mocking. I thought this is really professional.
We've
I'm
got the shadow of science
on this podcast. It's so professional.
Well, it's a. The format, we probably won't follow it all, but it's...
You're keeping us on track, John, and I respect that.
Yeah, no, actually, you know, we started doing it just so we don't... to just try to tighten things up, because Patrick and I are so chatty that we'll just go forever. So it sort of gives us a way to, like, keep it in a 45-minute range without doing hour-and-a-half shows all the time. So, but why don't you go first, then, Matt? Why don't you do your pick this week?
You know, I early, because you sent me the format, I said, well, shit, now I got to think of something that I like, and I hate everything. But luckily, last night, my girlfriend Nikki and I, we went and saw The Monuments Men. And I wanted to see it. It looked interesting, and George Clooney's a very good director. Like, I like the stuff he's done. But I wasn't expecting the experience I had with this movie. It was insane. I was literally moved to tears twice during this movie. I cannot remember, literally cannot remember the last time that happened, if it ever did happen. But on two separate occasions during this movie, I just found myself breaking down. It was just so beautiful and painful and suspenseful and just so well done. And the cast, oh my God, dude, this cast is like, this is my dream cast. It's got John Goodman and Bill Murray, both of whom rank among like my favorite actors of all time. You got Clooney, you got Damon, you got Bob Balaban, who's an amazing character actor. The French dude from The Artist, whose name escapes me, as it always does, but he's fantastic. And, yeah, it was just, I haven't had that depth with a movie in a while. I don't think it happened all last year, the year before. So my pick of the week would have to be Go See the Monuments Men. It really kicked my ass.
Very cool.
Very good. Yeah, I'm looking forward to that one myself. So, Patrick, what's your pick this week?
I'm going slightly different. I went with Black Sails, which is the new show on Starz about pirates.
I saw that pilot. That was good.
It was. It was a lot better than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah,
I was worried because Michael Bay's involved, but it really delivered. It was very good. I've seen two episodes now, and my DVR is set to record them, and I just really enjoyed it. I mean, it's like that HBO kind of take on stuff. It's very, very violent, and there's tons of things going on. It's not quite as bad as like Spartacus, as far as violence. But very, very good stuff. I'm really enjoying it. So I suggest people go out and check that out.
Cool. Very good. My pick this week is it sounds so horrible. Is the OtterBox. The OtterBox.
It sounds like some weird porn, y'all. Yeah.
I realized I was saying, I'm like, oh, Matt's on the show today. Uh-huh. Like, this is not going to get out. But the OtterBox is actually, they make cases for your phones and your tablets and such. So I bought an iPad.
There's only one case for your phone.
I know. You have your Doctor Who case for that. But
that's what that is.
Yeah. But
it looked like Patrick had literally stepped into a TARDIS, and now we were just. I was like, touché.
Yeah. Wow. But it's a very heavy duty iPad case that we got. I got the iPad over this summer, and with the idea that my son would use it, who's 7 years old, and autistic and clumsy, and drop stuff all the time. And every iPod/iPhone device we have, and no one's going to see this, but you can see this was his iPod, totally broken. It still works. All this stuff still works, but they're all cracked and everything. And so I was.
When you got to drive tent spikes with your phone, like what?
Yeah, exactly. But because we moved to an apartment that didn't have rugs, and we used to have rugs, and when stuff would drop, it was no big deal. Now we have hardwood floors, and stuff drops and it breaks now.
I mean, hardwood floors and kids, man. Like, what are you gonna do?
Yeah. Anytime he would use the iPad, I would like sit right on the couch with him and just make sure he didn't drop it. And my wife is like, you know, I heard there's a really good case for that, and I know a lot of people use it for their iPhone. So we went and bought it, and I think if you shop around on Amazon, you can get them in about the $50 range or so. So it's kind of pricey, but it's like a rubber shell and then a plastic shell and then another rubber shell on the outside of it. So you can drop it. And because in his school, they use the iPads a lot, so I know they have them all protected like that. But it takes a while to actually get the case on. It's like you have to, like, it is three layers and you have to put some time into putting it on, but it doesn't add as much weight and it doesn't add as much footprint as I thought it would, so it's still kind of nice and usable, but very durable and very good. So if you have an iPad or a tablet like that, you're pretty well be using it for a couple days, but I feel good just leaving him on the couch playing by himself, and if he drops it, no big whoop. So
now John, when you're a guy, I'm sure you understand how this works. When your friend's pain is usually funny to you. Mm-hmm. So like someone drops their phone or something breaks it, and you can kind of laugh. But there's
a reason. It's not
there's degrees.
God, this is riddled with cancer. That's
right,
fucking
right. Hilarious. Exactly. There's degrees. Now I was sitting at a Panera. I was in the outside area, and this guy is walking out, and something happened, and I turned and looked, and he somehow had managed to drop his phone and let go of the door at the same time. So the door came in, smacked his phone. All I saw was him reach over, pick up his phone, and I could see the whole case was – it looked like a window that someone had thrown a brick through. It was just shattered. And at that moment, I it was like – it was kind of funny, but at the same time, it was more painful. You know, it's like, and you could tell he just picked that phone up and he ran for his life. He was like out of there before anybody could say anything or do anything. So I feel your pain on dropping the phones, because the phones, that's not funny. Those are, they're so freaking expensive anymore.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
You know?
Yeah.
No, nothing you're saying is wrong. I'm marveling at the place we've come to at this point in our societal cultural history. Like, not the phone, man. That's not funny.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. You dropped the phone in the toilet?
Nuts by that huge sledgehammer. That was hilarious. But when I thought I broke the phone in your pocket, then I wept openly.
So, all right. Well, let's get on to our main topic. And one of the reasons I asked Matt to be on the show this week is he has been writing, you know, Matt and I are, I've only actually written one or two things on it, but Matt's using a service called Medium, which is sort of, I guess it's the guy who runs Twitter. It's the blogging platform that he's starting. And it's a really good sort of blogging, but it's sort of meant for long articles rather than just trying to get hits. And, you know, you're not going to see a lot of list posts on
Medium. Yeah, they're trying to focus it on more personal stories, although it tends to end up being a lot of tech articles, which I hope they break out of. But it's a fantastic text editor, like the best one I've seen, literally, in as many years. And I don't know, I just found it. It was so beautiful and so easy to use and so enabling when it comes to writing. And for a long time, I've been really obsessed with, like, Professional Pursuits, and, you know, I got deadlines and I got things. And it's just sort of like I just wrote something just to write it again on Medium for the first time in a long time, and that just kind of got me into it. And it's cool. It's a very cool tool.
Yeah, it's very minimalist in terms of so it just gets you to writing right away, and it's really clean, and it's so for blogging it's really good. So Matt wrote an article, so I'm subscribed to his Medium feed, and he wrote one on screenwriting and how it was sort of. But what, Matt, why don't you explain what it inspired, because you sort of had an interaction with some other writers on Twitter, and that sort of inspired the article. So why don't you start from there?
All right, I'll try to set it up briefly. It really just started. I follow Cameron Hurley and Chuck Wendig on Twitter. They're both authors, if you don't know, fantastic authors. I genuinely am a big fan of their fiction. Cameron Hurley was talking about, I believe she was saying she liked cons because she liked pretending that writing was her full-time job, because although she is a published novelist with a book series, she also maintains a day job like many working authors do. And I tweeted at her very dissonantly and just told her I'd been reading her stuff, and I firmly believe she would get there. And it got in this thing about, she said she liked money or something like that, which is why she, you know, she had to do the day job. And I said I did too, and that's money is the reason I started screenwriting in the first place. And Chuck Wendig sort of got in the discussion, and I tuned out. I was doing something else. And they sort of got into this back and forth about how insane screenwriting in Hollywood is compared to the publishing industry, and just the complete contradiction that is the movie business, where, you know, most of the movies that are written are never shot. You know, they were talking about how insane that was, you know, to write 10 novels and then none of them ever come out. And, you know, like I say in the post, nothing they said was off base. It was dead on. But it sort of annoyed me that they were bagging on screenwriting, because that's how I make my living. I'm primarily a screenwriter. I write fiction, but I make my living on screenwriting. And, you know, I got over the annoyance part really quickly, but it wasn't about them. It just got me thinking about experiences I've had in publishing versus experiences I've had in the screenwriting. And it got me writing this article. So that's what I did. I kind of compared the two, and it really just became, I wanted to put that out there as an option for working writers or people that want to be working writers, because it's a really broad, lucrative field. And I think a lot of people feel the way Wendig and Hurley feel about it, and that sort of puts them off right away. They see it in the context of movies, and that's the only way you can be a screenwriter, and it's just so far-fetched. But the truth is much more broad than that. So I ended up writing this post about it.
Now, so you know, it was interesting, because I when I read it, I thought a lot about that, you know, our initial meeting at that con, in that it was sort of, yeah, this is you're making a living doing it. And I think one of the things, you know, that you spoke about before, about, and this is certainly not at Chuck, who does make his living writing fiction, and
yeah, I in no way was bagging on either of them.
Yeah.
Calling them out or anything, that their discussion, they're very factual, true discussion, just what got me down the road of this, and that's what set me off. But yeah, no, they're both, and Wendig himself is a screenwriter who has, you know, I think he had a pilot at TBS for a while, and he's got several projects going, so it was not to denigrate them at all.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But it just made me think a lot about, you know, I think whatever this community, whether it's the writing community or any sort of art, I think with the way the internet is and the world is. I think everybody who has an artistic inkling can express that. And I think that's good, and I think that's fine. But that does not necessarily mean, not even that, I won't even qualify it that much. It does not mean that you can make a living or make money doing it, or should.
Absolutely, yeah.
And so I think what happens is when someone has an artistic inkling, I think a lot of times they just start to feel this sense of maybe entitlement that, like, oh, I'm doing something cool. Like, I should be famous like whoever. And I think that's what you're talking about with cons, and like that sort of delusion is that a lot of people that are at the cons sort of feel that way. And what I noticed at cons, and this is sort of taking us off topic for a second, but I just found a lot of, like, you know, if you're sort of sitting there trying to hawk your book and no one knows who you are, and I think that's fine if you do that once or twice, but after like the second time you sit at that table and no one buys your book, or very few people buy your book, or like, don't you learn from that and go, like, maybe this is not where I'm at right now, and maybe I should, you know, spend my time doing, I'm not saying don't pursue, like, spend your time writing, like, spend your time getting better at writing, or spend your time doing what have you. And it really kind of, I don't know why, it reminded me of our initial meeting and that sort of conversation that we had. Because I think what you were getting at with your screenwriting article was that you were talking about the practicality of making a living writing, of doing what you like. And you were sort of talking about how there's this, you know, the thing that's hardest about screenwriting is that, yeah, you do write a lot of stuff that maybe doesn't see the light of day, but you get paid for it.
Yeah,
so,
absolutely.
So I mean, so where are you
at? Hold on, John. Before you move on from that, there's a disconnect with authors for some reason, and this is one of the things where we go back to talking about truth, and Matt telling, you know, truth, and people don't like truth, they especially don't like it at a convention. But if there's anything that gets me in trouble when I'm talking to other authors, it's when I suggest that you should be able to make a living writing. It's like, you know, you're supposed to suffer. You're supposed to be an artist. You're not supposed to make a living. You know, only a few people make those sellouts make livings as writers. You know, it's like this whole big thing, and I don't get it.
I mean, dude, it's not hard to understand. That's. You're presented with a situation that the reality is you are probably not going to make a living writing novels, and there's no way around that. The market and the money and the spots just aren't there, but you want to write novels. So you can either accept the fact that you're trying to break into what is largely a broken industry with very few spots for rampant success, or you can rationalize it by saying, well, I'm an artist and this is what I suffer for, and it's not the industry and it's not me. It's just, that's the way it's supposed to be with my art. And it's just rational. It's a way of rationalizing. It's what people always do. I do it too. I rationalize shit all the time. Like, you know, I delude myself in many other ways. But it's not hard to understand how people get there. It's when you can't achieve something you want, you have to rationalize why you can't have it. And their rationalization is, this is the business we've chosen, only this is the art we've chosen. And it's just a rationalization technique.
And it's very frustrating.
It is very frustrating. I don't know, man. The more I do this, and the more I recently got, I was off fiction for a long time. I was off writing fiction for years and just focusing on screenwriting. Not writing fiction, but trying to publish it. I was off the publishing industry. I never stopped writing fiction. I love fiction. And I recently, within the last year and a half, got back into it. And the more I do it this time around, the more I put stuff out myself, the less interested I become in being part of an industry or a community or just being a writer. Like, I'd rather write than be a fiction writer, because being a fiction writer is just so often a self-delusional, sad fucking thing. And it's not their fault. And it's seriously not. And like, people are going to get on me and they're going to say, I say shit like that because I can't make it as a professional novelist or whatever, blah, blah, blah. And there may be some truth to that, but that doesn't change the fact that the more insular and cut off and pissed on a community becomes, the more delusional and just bitchy they get about it. And it's just not a healthy environment most of the time, man. A lot of booze, a lot of aggrandizing, a lot of self-loathing, and you know, that's not everything. I'm generalizing very broadly, and I realize that, there are a lot of working novelists who are very cool people, and there are a lot of groups of professional novelists who are cool people, but just by and large as a community and as an industry, I just find it to be a very unhealthy, toxic place. And I'm not saying screenwriting is better. Like, you know, one of the points I made in the piece I wrote was that I've had just as many fucked up experiences in the publishing industry as I have in the screenwriting industry. They both have insane amounts of crazy going on. But I just feel like there's an honesty in screenwriting that you don't find in fiction writing. We know what we're doing. We know we're working for a living. We know that there's a ceiling on the creativity that we're going to hit sometimes. And it's just, it's not that it's not about art. It's not that we're not trying to do good work. It's just you have to accept a much more stark amount of reality as a screenwriter than you do as a fiction writer. There's less pretense about it.
It's a job. It's a job. You're getting paid.
Yeah.
Well, I know for me, you know, it seems like over the past year or maybe even a little more than that now, I know for me, because I kind of come at it from a weird angle because I do music, but I'm sort of in this sort of writer community more than I am in like a music community. And I think a lot of what Matt just said really resonated with me because I sort of felt like, oh, I'm sort of here doing stuff and maybe there's a living to be made here. And what I've discovered over the past couple of years is like, well, for me at least, there's not a living to be made like that. And it has nothing to do with I'm good or bad or you know, oh, people don't get me or it has nothing to do with that. It's that for me, there is not a living to be made. There's a couple bucks to be made, but there's not a living to be made. And coming to that, and it took a long time to get to that conclusion. When I finally realized that, I was like, all right, that's fine. That's totally fine. Like, so instead of worrying about, you know, or trying to like get into that club or to get, or whatever, try to get certain gigs or anything like that. It's like, well, why don't I just like worry about making really good music? And I have a day job already, so I'll work my day job and I'll take care of my family and I will make sure that I have time every day to work on making good music and I'll put it out there and some people will like it and some people will buy it and that's good and that's fine. But I think there's a lot of authors maybe that are probably in the same boat as me but maybe haven't reached that conclusion. Maybe they shouldn't reach that conclusion. Maybe it's different for everybody. But I feel like sometimes when I hear some people talk, I'm like, that's not really where you're at right now. You know, I don't know if you should be talking like that right now or thinking about those kinds of things.
You're talking about acceptance and honesty. Mm-hmm. There's nothing wrong with that. You know, I don't think it's author specifically. I think you find a lot of it.
Definitely not.
And admittedly, like I'm not, you know, musicians, painters, whatever the hell it is. Like fiction is the one thing I have experience with. So I'm sure it's just as prevalent in all those other
groups. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing. The thing is with all this shit, when you're trying to do creative things, you're trying to do art and then you're trying to make a living off it. You just have to scale it to suit you and your life and your circumstance. And, you know, some people can live a penniless existence and eke by on what they get, and that's fine. Some people, most writers I've found, most novelists who classify themselves as full-time novelists, they generally have a spouse or a significant other who's taking up the slack for them, and that allows them to do their stuff full-time. Whereas if they were on their own, they wouldn't be. And that's fine, too. You know, for me, it's just... You know, I have bills to pay and I have things to do, and fiction wasn't taking care of that the way that screenwriting was, so I had to make a choice of, I don't like having a day job personally, I don't function well within a group dynamic, I don't respond well to authority, so...
No!
Freelance writing is one of the only marketable, like writing is one of the only marketable skills I have, so I had to find a way, I had to scale it to me to find a way to be a freelance writer, make a living doing it. And screenwriting was the way that I chose. And that was me just saying, look, man, like you can keep chasing this novelist thing, but the margins are very slim that it's going to pan out and pay you the kind of money you want. Doesn't mean you have to stop doing fiction, but I had to accept that the publishing industry was not going to take care of me and my life. So that's all it is, man. It's just a small amount of acceptance and honesty.
Now, Matt, I've heard different things about screenwriting as far as how people get paid for it. Right. Can you clarify that a little bit? Because I had heard at one point that you don't actually get paid until you sell a script.
Oh, no, that's not true at all, man. I mean, there are very few instances where I go to work without having some kind of, like, with if I'm writing a feature, I'll get a portion up front most of the time, and then something when the drafts are completed. And yeah, man, no, that's ridiculous. There are people, and the thing is, any medium of writing you choose, whoever's hiring you will try to get as much out of you for as little as possible. That's just standard sure. operating procedure for any kind of freelance, right?
Sure.
Because writing is the one thing people don't seem to ever want to pay for, ever. It's just gotten to that place where it's very devalued as a craft, well, even though it's entirely necessary.
Writing in web development, so.
Writing in web development. Nobody wants to pay for web development. Everyone should just have a website. That's what we become entitled to. We're entitled to free writing and free websites. So, yeah, no, man, I don't advise anybody to ever go to work without having money, because what are you living on while you're working on the thing?
Exactly.
Which is always my rationalization, always what I tell anybody who wants me to start without money. Like, you should never, never do that.
Cool, cool. So I should also point out that after Matt wrote his initial article about screenwriting, I tweeted out the story a couple times, and a couple people that follow me liked it and quickly asked, well, how do you get into screenwriting, man?
Yeah, everybody asked that, which is crazy. I didn't see that coming, and I absolutely should have, because the whole thing about screenwriting is a choice. Everybody's like, well, okay, I've chosen it. How the hell do I do it?
So Matt was kind enough to then write a follow-up article on it and his experiences breaking into screenwriting. So if screenwriting is something that you're interested in, I highly recommend that you go and check out both of those articles that Matt wrote. So they're on his – I guess can they get it through your Twitter, or how does that work?
In my medium, a lot of – this is weird. A lot of people seem confused about how to get to people's mediums. It's – all it is medium.com/@whatever your Twitter –
Okay, that's what I thought.
Yeah. That's the thing. People are missing the at. So you have to put the at in there. That's how you get to somebody's medium. It's medium.com/@whatever their Twitter name is.
Right. Very cool. Very cool. So yeah, so go and check out both those articles and, you know, follow Matt on the Twitter. Matt is probably one of the most interesting people that you can follow. He's colorful in his language. So, you know, if you're squeamish, you wouldn't have made it this far into the podcast anyway. So, go and follow Matt on Twitter. You won't be disappointed. So check that out. So Matt, you know, your website is not working right now, but it is just at Matt FN Wallace, and your website is Matt-Wallace.com,
and it will be up very, very soon. It's down temporarily while we redesign and deal with some malicious code issues. But I've seen the previews that my guys are working on. It's beautiful. It's going to be back better than ever. So yeah, Matt-Wallace.com. Just stick with it. Few days, week tops, it'll be back up.
Cool.
My Twitter is Matt FN Wallace.
Cool. And what you talked a little bit about your fiction. What can people go and check out that you have available right now?
You can go to my – I got all my stuff up on Amazon. You can get The Failed Cities is the novel that I did. I self-published that at the end of 2012, and then last year The House of Murky Depths, a British specialty publisher, they put out a beautiful print edition of it. I think there's still a few copies of that left. You go to murkydepths.com, you can get one. Otherwise, you can get the ebook on Amazon. And on the 18th, which I guess it's less than 2 weeks from now, I'm starting a new ebook series called Slingers, and I'll be releasing the first ebook in that series on Wednesday, February 18th on Amazon.
Now,
cool.
And it's free. It will be absolutely free.
And Matt, do you still do the workshops, or are you done with those?
I stopped doing the TLC stuff that I was doing. I did that for like 2 years, and it was great, but it was just kind of time to put it to bed. I am right now working on a new workshop for later in this year that's actually going to be kind of a hybrid workshop writing competition.
Okay.
And I haven't released the details about that yet, but I hopefully will within the next month. And it's going to be really cool. I've got some really good people coming in with me on, some other good authors, and it's going to be a good time. So, yeah, watch out for that. I'll release the details as soon as they're ready.
Okay, cool.
Cool. Cool. Very good. All right. For me this week, again, just go check out my music over at johnanilio.com. You can follow me on Twitter at johnanilio. And Patrick, what do you have going on this week?
I still have my reviews over at Kirkus. As of this recording, the last one is Nemo, Heart of Ice, which is a graphic novel written by Alan Moore. I always have something up over there every 2 weeks, so check out Kirkus. Also check out SF Signal for the podcast there. I am interviewed on the Way of the Buffalo podcast, and I will be the official podcaster at the Pikes Peaks Writers Conference, April 25th through 27th. If you're looking for a writers conference, that might be the one for you, so go check that out. And then I did put it out there that we were going to have Matt Effenwallace on. And I did get a question here for you, Matt. So give me just a second here. Dear bad cop.
I am the angel of death, Mur. The time for purification is at hand.
Good cop. I believe in you.
Bad cop.
You have nothing better to do.
Good cop.
You are allowed to
serve. Bad cop.
Seriously, what the fuck?
Dear cops.
I'm an author who has never been published and don't have a blog, Twitter, or Facebook account and have never been to a convention or workshop. I have 6 novels that I've written on my mom's old typewriter. None of them have ever been read by other people or been edited. All are Harry Potter / 50 Shades of Grey fan fiction mashups, around 130,000 words each. Should I just put them up on Amazon and make a lot of money right now and get rich, or try to get them published traditionally?
I feel like that was written by Murr. So I want to believe that's where that came from. And that was beautiful. I can't top that. Whoever did author that, you win. You bested the bad cop. I've got nothing.
That would be me.
Very nice.
Very good.
We did get a question on Twitter, too, if you got a minute for it.
Oh, what's the question on Twitter?
Jonathan Schieffer, I've got Twitter on my main. Jonathan Schieffer asks, how common is being a nerd / geek in pro wrestling? Because I used to be a pro wrestler.
I used to love pro wrestling. I remember when Jesse the Body Ventura came to Fresno when I was a kid, my brother got us tickets and we actually went, and Jesse was on the local news and they said, you know, hey, we're so glad you could come here, you know, to Fresno. He's like, yeah, I'm really happy to be in Fresno, the armpit of California.
Yeah, he said that about every town around the country. That was his standard line. Hey, he was one of the best talkers ever. Problem was, once he got in the ring, he was shit.
Yeah.
So, fantastic talker. He could have been Hulk Hogan if he could have carried that into the ring. But yeah.
Well,
so
we don't
have
to
answer this, or
yeah, go for it.
Yeah. Go for it. Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's a good question too. Yeah, I was a pro wrestler for 10 years. Pro wrestling locker room, especially in the independent circuit, which is what I primarily did, is one of the sickest melting pots of people you will ever find anywhere. Like, it's a place where I would literally sit wedged between, like, a dude who did 5 years in Rikers Island for shooting at cops, and he's snorting a bunch of coke. And then on this side, I've got a guy who used to be a broker at J.P. Morgan and left to be a pro wrestler and is living on his fucking camel-choking severance package. So you find all kinds in a pro wrestling locker room, and you'd be shocked by the variety of people that become professional wrestlers. We all share neuroses, but we all come from different places.
Are you aware of the book Hitman by Bret Hart?
Where every big pro wrestler has written a biography at this point. I haven't read Bret Hart's yet, but yeah, I have heard about it.
Apparently, he talks about like massive amounts of drug use and all the drinking and stuff. You know, to keep guys together because they get so badly hurt. You know, it's worse than football.
It's the travel log more than anything, man. Like, it just in the 80s, back when we had territories, we had different regional organizations. You'd work within a certain area, and it's not that you wouldn't travel, but there was just less distance and less all out. And then when the WWE came along, monopolized everything. It's 365. You're flying all over the world nonstop. You're wrestling 4 times a week. It's just the wear physically and psychologically like nothing you can imagine. So it's not surprising guys are holding themselves together with steroids and uppers and booze and pot and all this other shit.
Do they even have competition anymore, the WWE?
No, there's nobody who compete directly with WWE. It's sick. I mean, I think TNA's still going. That's another national company, but
what about
no?
Wasn't it like NWA was one, National Wrestlers Association or something? And
well, NWA was like the old school one from, you know, they were running back in the 40s, and they sort of got co-opted into the WCW back when that was a thing. So no, I mean, the WWE is it as far as American wrestling goes. There's no one else you can work for and really make a living doing it.
So you have to kiss Vince Vaughn's ass.
Vince McMahon.
Vince McMahon. That's right, McMahon.
Wilson gets all his work, I assume. But yeah. No, Vince McMahon. No, I mean, they own it all. It's a monopoly. no antitrust action will ever be taken against them despite monopolizing an entire American industry. But that's a whole other podcast.
Wow.
Well, we'll have to have you back and talk about your experiences with pro wrestling.
Anytime, guys. I had heard about this podcast. I honestly didn't realize it was you guys who did it. So,
I know those dudes.
But yeah, anytime, guys.
Thanks,
cool,
Matt.
Cool. Thanks, Matt. Well, have a good week. And everyone, we will see you next time. Bye.
Smoke. I'd like to say thank you on behalf of the group and ourselves, and I hope we pass the audition.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.